Jabez asks for material blessing, but then asks for God's presence and protection, knowing that these things were the essential requests that protected him from making that material ask an idol.
This is Mission 66, a ministry of TWR in partnership with the teaching ministry of Dr. Luis Seau. Join us as we discover the timeless truths of the Bible, book by book, chapter by chapter. Today, we investigate the deep history of Israel's royalty in 1 Chronicles. John Matthews and Esther Sisulu will be our guides. Download the free study guide at mission66.org. As we begin, ask God to open your heart to His Word.
Welcome to our program of Bible exploration, chapter by chapter, providing explanations as we go along. Now, today we'll be scanning the high points of the first nine chapters of 1 Chronicles. And most of the content in these chapters contains the names of heads of tribal families, all of which formed a bedrock for the Judeans who were returning from a long captivity in Babylon. Among the golden items hidden in these list of names was a man named Jabez, who prayed a simple yet heartfelt prayer. And our teacher, John Matthews, will lead our discussion with the theme, God's faithfulness across generations.
Esther, thank you so much, and a very warm welcome, as always, to this latest episode of Mission 66. So good to have you with us and to have your company as we reach the first book of Chronicles. Now, this is another of those historical books in the Bible. The books of 1st and 2nd Samuel, 1st and 2nd Kings, they describe a time span involving the kings of Israel and Judah from Saul through to Zedekiah. Now, they're not a complete history of the time span they cover, but the things that are written are true and historically accurate. Now, 1st and 2nd Chronicles, where we're at right now, they're a little different in that they only cover the kings of Judah. They don't actually even mention the kings of Israel except in passing comment. Now, the Chronicles were written by the priests of Judah, and they describe the lives of the kings of Judah, as it were, effectively from God's perspective. And some of the things written about the kings that are written in the books of the kings don't show up in the Chronicles. And similarly, things that are included in the Chronicles that we're not told in any of the other historical books. And many of the things that we'll be reading about in Chronicles may just sound familiar to you, perhaps like repeats of things we've already read in the Kings. And so we'll attempt not to be too repetitious, but to concentrate on those things that are revealed in these books that were not included when we were going through Kings. Now, today, we're setting a new record, actually, for Mission 66, because we're covering all of nine chapters. And the reason that we're doing that is because, in the main, they contain lists of genealogies. And, of course, there was purpose for them, as we're going to see. And Chronicles was written during a time when, after the Judeans returned from the Babylonian captivity, there was this effort to understand the past, reflect on what had happened to them, and indeed why it had happened, and perhaps more importantly, so that the people returning from captivity in Babylon would be able to prove that they were descendants of those mentioned, and so revisit the covenant relationship between God and his people. So, for the people of Judah returning from Babylonian captivity, Chronicles serves as this solid basis upon which to encourage themselves in the knowledge that they belonged to God. They might not have felt that way, but their history and what God had done for them was something they were going to be and needed to be and wanted to be, in the main, reminded of. Now, we're not going to read every name here, and so I'll be summarising the content of each chapter, but I'd encourage you to reach the chapters, or read the chapters rather, on your own, just to get a sense of the rhythm of the history and of what is written. So chapters 1 through 9 of 1 Chronicles, they're packed jam full of names in these genealogies. For example, the first chapter starts out listing the generations from Adam to Abraham. Then it lists all the descendants of Abraham all the way to Jacob. Now, Abraham's lineage is, of course, key because it leads to the establishment of the monarchy centred on the house of King David. For example, chapter 1 includes the descendants of Esau, who was not part of God's chosen lineage due to his personal choices, but also with respect to God's sovereign plan. In chapter 2, the focus then shifts to the tribe of Judah. Now, this genealogy is selective. It highlights, emphasizes individuals who play a role in the historical trajectory that leads to David's lineage. And chapter 2 lists the children of Jacob, also known as Israel. Jacob was known as Israel. And that distinguished people who were separate, not to be reckoned among the nations. But the truth is that all are welcome to partake of the salvation which comes from the Messiah, Jesus. And so it is important to remember that the lineage leads all the way to the birth of Jesus. Also important to restate the First and Second Chronicles. They act as this kind of summary of everything that we've seen occur from the beginning of time when God creates the world in Genesis to the end of the book that we've just completed on Mission 66, which is 2 Kings. And do you know, Esther, a central theme in Chronicles is the lineage of David and the fulfillment of God's promise that there was going to be a successor on David's throne. That promise is re-examined in light of the people's experiences. Their land had been conquered, their temple destroyed. They'd spent this significant time in exile. Chronicles therefore looks back at the entire history of God's dealings with his people, beginning with the first man created, Adam, and offers hope then for the future. And so, you know, as you read them, the genealogies may seem overwhelming at first, name upon names, but they do reveal God's plan through history and his covenant relationship with people, real people, chosen people. Chapter 3 then details David's descendants, and that includes the royal line that extended even after the exile, and subsequent chapters outline the genealogies of the other tribes of Israel. Chapter 4, for example, mentions Simeon, whose tribe was assimilated into the tribe of Judah. Chapter 4 also records a prayer made by a man called Jabez. Now, who's this Jabez? He's not listed anywhere else in the Bible. His name appearing here hints that he is in the line of Judah, and his prayer, remarkable enough to merit a word-for-word reading in chapter 4, verse 9. This is what it says. Jabez was more honourable than his brothers, and his mother called his name Jabez, saying, "Because I bore him in pain." And Jabez called upon the God of Israel, saying, "Oh, that you would bless me and enlarge my border, and that your hand might be with me, and that you would keep me from harm, so that it might not bring me pain." And God granted what he asked. Oh, what peace we often forfeit. Oh, what needless pain we bear. All because we do not carry everything to God in prayer. And here Jabez, with a heart that is right before God, asks. And then chapter 5 addresses Reuben, Gad, and half of the tribe of Manasseh. Recall that Reuben lost his birthright, even though he retained his sonship because of immorality, and that birthright was given to Joseph, who was a moral man. It says from verse 18 to 20, the Reubenites, the Gadites, the half-tribe of Manasseh had valiant men who carried shield and sword and drew the bow, experts in war, 44,760 of them able to go to war. And they waged war against the Hagrites, Jetur, Naphish, and Nodab. And when they prevailed over them, the Hagrites and all who were with them were given into their hands, for they cried out to God in the battle, and he granted their urgent plea because they trusted in him. And chapter 6 of 1 Chronicles provides then a detailed account of the tribe of Levi. This is the tribe that David put in charge of temple worship. They were the tribe designated as the priestly tribe, even though not every Levite became a priest. And the Levites were also given no land inheritance, but they were sustained by the offerings of God's people. But Levi's descendant Aaron, he becomes the one that God assigns the office of priest. Chapter 7 then covers the tribes of Issachar, Benjamin, Naphtali, and another portion of Manasseh, as well as Ephraim and Asher. Joshua, who fought that battle of Jericho, was from the tribe of Ephraim, and each tribe's genealogy reflects its unique role in Israel's history and identity as God's chosen people. And then chapter 8 focuses extensively on the tribe of Benjamin, dedicating around 40 verses to its genealogy. Question arises, why such emphasis? Well, that's because Chronicles underscores the theocratic monarchy, God's rule through monarchy. And the first king, Saul, he came from the tribe of Benjamin. Despite Saul's failures, his role as Israel's first king is undoubtedly significant, and this special focus highlights the importance of Benjamin in the narrative. Chronicles doesn't actually talk about Saul's life and work, but because of his failures, the best Chronicles can do for him is a genealogy. And the narrative skips from Saul's genealogy to the end of the Babylonian captivity of Judah. Why does it do that? Well, the theologian Matthew Henry said this: one end of recording all these genealogies was to direct the Jews when they returned out of captivity with whom to unite and where to reside. Chapter 9 then shifts to the period after the Judeans return from Babylon, and it includes a census of those who actually return, listing leaders and members of each tribe. And that chapter 9 concludes with a reference to Saul's genealogy, tying the narrative back to the tribe of Benjamin. The author of the Chronicles is often referred simply as the chronicler, and he compiles this comprehensive account, emphasizing the enduring covenant relationship between God and his people. And even after their failures and their suffering, God's promises remain steadfast. And through this almost exhaustive list of names, we are reminded, Esther, that God is the only God of history.
What a wonderful reminder that is indeed, John. And to you, friend, thank you so much for staying with us here on Mission 66. Our friend and teacher taking us through this whopping 9-chapter review. And I'm Esther, your host, and I'm armed with some questions to discuss what we've just read. Now, John, this account is not meant to be a genealogy of the human race, the entire human race. That is, I suppose it's only of the descendants of Jacob. Am I correct?
You are, Esther, because even though, look, we're all descended from Noah, if we go back far enough, keeping a genealogy of the whole world, well, that's going to be impossible, isn't it? And the nations are now so mixed together that no one nation can claim that they're descended entirely from any other. The only thing actually that we can be sure of is that God has created all nations of mankind through one, all descended from one Adam and one Noah. Israel, there was a distinction with Israel And their genealogy was important because it gave the returnees from exile an idea of their roots. It's also important in identifying the Messiah when he came, because anyone who came claiming to be the Messiah had to prove that they were from the right bloodline, which was, as foretold, from the line of Judah, and Jesus was to be that person.
You know, it does make sense to me why we should remember the past, and who our ancestors are. Tracking that along is beneficial to us. But wouldn't writing a book like Chronicles just be repeating something that we already know? I suppose, what would be the purpose of writing something that we are already accustomed to?
Yeah, you are right, Esther. You know, when someone reads the book of Chronicles, they will notice much of what is written there appears in the books of Samuel and Kings as well. I guess the difference is the same story can be told differently depending on the needs of the audience. And if we take a closer look, the writings in Samuel and Kings, they focus on what happened during a time when the people were drifting away and disobeying God. Chronicles, on the other hand, revisits history from a perspective of rebuilding the future, and the people needed to look back and revisit the past, noting the mistakes in order to look effectively toward the future. And the stories, you're right, while they may be similar, they do have distinct focuses and aspects that tailor to what is coming up, to new needs. You know, even when you read a text from the Bible that you think that you know, but in a given context, it can really impact your life in a way that it's never done before. The expression sometimes is, it was as though I read it for the first time. Happens all the time when I read the Bible. And that retelling of stories is, in fact, a sign of wisdom.
Well, look, John, you know, there really are a lot of names mentioned here. I mean, the list is almost endless, but I know that it's not limited to just the people of Judah. So let's talk about why that's the case.
Yeah, I'm going to quickly rip through all of them now. I'll be done by Christmas time, probably. No, I'm joking, of course. That's 25-minute episodes and all that, and podcasts a bit longer, don't forget. But looking at the book, we should consider this, that since Chronicles was written by some of the exiles of Judah, there is a historical context. Remember that Samaria, which was the capital of the northern kingdom Israel, had been conquered by the Assyrians under Sennacherib. That was in 722 BC. Now, Israel comprised of the 10 tribes, and they were taken into captivity, and they were subjected to Assyrian rule. Judah and Benjamin comprised the southern kingdom of Judah. They were conquered later by Babylon under Nebuchadnezzar in 586 BC, and they were in captivity in Babylon for 70 years, all of which had been foretold by the prophets. Now, when we look at the list written by the people of Judah following their captivity, we see an effort towards accuracy and precision. That's a good thing, you say, and yes, it is. But there are two main reasons for that. First is that the people needed to revisit their history. They needed to understand that they were part of a much, much bigger narrative than merely the tribe of Judah. They also had to grasp the broader implications of how God had led them in the formation of the people and their tribes. And in addition, the genealogy shows God's process of selection. In the genealogical list of Chronicles, we see God acting through Jacob's lineage. That was his chosen line.
John, can we perhaps estimate its time frame and possibly the author of this book?
Yeah, well, look, the last event, Esther, recorded at the end of 2 Chronicles is Cyrus, king of Persia, who made the decree allowing the Jews to return to Judah. Remember that Persia had conquered Babylon, the New World Empire. That happened in 538 BC, and so Chronicles was likely written shortly after that. And in 1 Chronicles chapter 3, verse 24, we come across a man called Anani listed in the genealogy. Now, he is the eighth generation after King Jehoiakim, who was deported to Babylon in 597 BC. So, look, calculating approximately 25 years per generation from that date gives us a time frame of around 400 BC. So many scholars believe that Chronicles was written between 425 and 400 BC. You know, there's actually a tradition in the Jewish Talmud suggesting that Ezra the priest was the actual author of Chronicles. Some texts from Ezra chapter 1 appear at the end of Chronicles that support that possibility. Look, the reality is that not everybody agrees with that, and some simply refer to this unknown author as the chronicler. So we don't have a definitive answer about the author, but we do know roughly when Chronicles was written, and that was in the 5th century BC.
All right. Well, this is great, John. I think it's important for us to get this background information. Now, I want us to look at the prayer of Jabez in chapter 4. Am I incorrect in saying that it may seem a little like a selfish prayer?
I think you can describe the prayer of Jabez as quite straightforward. It might sound and come across as selfish, but who among us can say that our prayers are totally unselfish? On the contrary, and I speak from experience there. Actually, what happens here is that Jabez honours God by bringing these requests to him in a respectful way. And he gets answers because he actually prays where his brothers don't pray. But let's consider the prayer for a moment, which is straightforward and yet profound. The word Jabez means pain, and yet he, being more honourable than his brothers, who may have had names that were perhaps evoked a happier image, but he knows that his hope of blessing rests on God alone. And so he resolves, does Jabez, to devote himself entirely to God. And he says, Lord, if you will bless me, expand my border and keep me from that pain that I've been so familiar with all my life, I'm going to be at your disposal. This is a similar kind of language to that used by Jacob when he prays at Bethel, saying that if God would bless him and give him his food and clothing, that God would be his God. And you know, Esther, God's blessings, they are real and they produce real effects. And he also here asks God to enlarge his border. That could have meant that he wanted God to enlarge his ability to receive a godly influence. We don't know. He also prays that God's hand might be with him. You know, God's hand is able to lead us. It's able to protect us. It's able to strengthen us. It's able to enable us for every single type of work that he may call us to. And he also wanted to be kept from evil, does Jabez, which is really just what Jesus taught us to pray, didn't he? In the Lord's Prayer, when he said, deliver us from evil, meaning the evil of our own personal sin, the evil of trouble that hinders our walk, or all the evil designs of the devil and his minions. And for Jabez, it says, God grants his request. And so, yes, he does ask for material blessing, but then he asks for God's presence and his protection, knowing that these are essential to protect him from making that material ask an idol. And in doing so, God senses and knows that this man, Jabez, has a desire to honour God above all things. More of God and less of Jabez. The English preacher Charles Spurgeon wrote this of Jabez's prayer, saying, if today he deigns to bless us with a sense of pardoned sin, he tomorrow may distress us, make us feel the plague within, all to make us sick of self and fond of him. Jabez's prayer is a prayer of commitment. It's a prayer of honour. And God sees that and so answers and blesses Jabez.
You know, I do find it incredibly amazing that the account of Jabez's prayer is inserted in the midst of this long list of names and genealogies. You know, it's almost like this diamond that's hidden in this haystack.
Yeah, that's right. And God, you know, may have intended it as a reward for anyone interested in God's word long enough to be willing to pour through all those genealogies. You know, if you weren't, or we weren't even committed to reading this section, which is tedious, it's a tedious read at times, chances are we would have missed this precious gem. And this seems to be at about the halfway mark as well of these nine chapters. So it should be an encouragement to us that God is always, always ready and waiting and willing to hear our prayers. His line is never busy and his ear is never deaf.
Well, friends, you know, for you following along, look, I know the Chronicles are full of names and we'll find that much of it will be a retelling of the things that we've learned during the times of the kings. But we encourage you to stay with us during these episodes because everything has a purpose and there will be truths that are revealed in these books which can be applied to our lives, such as what we've just heard with the prayer of Jabez. Now, John, how should we summarize the first nine chapters of First Chronicles?
Well, from the first man, Adam, to Noah, and all the way up to the beginnings of Israel's monarchy, we find this long list of names that is important to Israel's history with our theme today, God's faithfulness across generations. First Chronicles, well, it's an historical book that focuses on the lineage and the kings of Judah, written from God's perspective by priests. Now, it differs from Samuel and Kings because it emphasizes Judah's covenant relationship with God and therefore admits the kings of Israel. And Chronicles was also written under the Babylonian captivity to help returning exiles reconnect with their roots, understand their history, and reflect on God's incredible promises. So chapters 1 to 9 contain mainly genealogies tracing Israel's lineage from Adam to David and the tribes of Israel. And these genealogies highlight God's sovereign plan and covenant fulfillment, particularly with regard to David's royal line. Key moments such as Jabez's prayer in chapter 4 offered these profound lessons of faith and remind us of God's responsiveness, his lovely responsiveness to our prayers. Chronicles also revisits Israel's history to encourage rebuilding and hope, reflecting on past failures and God's enduring promises. It underscores the importance of genealogy in identifying the Messiah's lineage, the broader narrative of God's faithfulness. And despite the fact that it seems repetitive at times, Chronicles provides a fresh perspective tailored to the people returning from exile in Babylon. It's a book that reminds us readers of God's unwavering presence in history, and it invites us to reflect on our own relationship with him. Hidden gems like Jabez's prayer encouraging us to pray more to the God who gives answers and inspires our trust and reliance on God in him and him alone in all circumstances and through all the changing scenes of life.
Our teacher John Matthews leaving us on such an encouraging note about the character of God. What a great God he is. Well, friend, we will be back again, same time, next time, as we continue looking through the book of First Chronicles. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Esther. For John and everybody here on Mission 66, see you next time.
Let me remind you to head on over to mission66.org to download your study guide. It's free. Dive deeper into the Bible teaching of John Matthews and learn how it all relates to your Christian walk. Tag along with John and Esther on our Bible road trip, episode by episode. Your study guide's waiting for you at mission66.org. That's where you can also post your questions or make a comment, and even help out with a donation to keep Mission 66's heart beating around the world. Hop on over to mission66.org. Mission 66 is a partnership of TWR and the ministry of Dr. Luis Seau.